welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us here on a Wednesday morning, every Wednesday. And we're going to have an interesting show today. We're going to be talking about a subject that you don't often think about when you think of federal employment in general, and that is dangerous jobs and workplace violence. When I think of dangerous jobs, I think of lumberjack and maybe tuna fisherman, one of these reality shows. But in fact, working for the federal government can be hazardous to your health. And my guests this morning to talk about this are Andy Medici and Stephen Losey from the Federal Times. And then coming up in the second half of the show, we'll be talking with Janet Copenhaver from Federally Employed Women, and she's going to talk about what sequestration would look like if those big cuts do take place in January. Stephen, Andy, you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, thanks for being here today. Andy, I was intrigued by your story with those MSPB figures. When I think of dangerous federal agencies, I think of the Postal Service because I know the accident rate there is high, and it's an industrial operation. Think of the IRS where the people are being assaulted and there have been fatalities at the IRS and some other places. But I did not think of the VA until you brought it up.
Well, this is one of those situations where we're constantly reminded that the federal worker isn't just someone behind a desk. It could be doctors, nurses, you know, Social Security claims people in field offices. But in the case of the VA, they have to deal with patients, customers, and there's a lot of traffic in and out of hospitals. And for a lot of reasons, that could be a dangerous job.
Well, I know I've been in hospital situations and in emergency rooms, and you're right, family members and friends can get very tense and take it out on the staff.
That's correct. You know, especially when you're providing sort of that frontline care, a lot of times you're going to be in situations or you're going to witness situations where someone might get out of control or someone might get upset, and those can be very volatile.
Well, as I said in the column this morning, a police friend told me one time that the most dangerous part of his job was being in a car. He said he had never, at that point, drawn his weapon in line of duty, you know, and only used it to train and clean it and that sort of thing. But he had never had to draw his gun, but that he was in a cruiser for 6 to 8 hours a day, and that was the dangerous part of it. Again, something you don't think about.
No, you know, that's definitely correct. And, you know, looking at the government-wide numbers, it was about 13% or one out of every eight federal employees said that they witnessed some type of workplace violence over the last 2 years. So the number is significant.
Now, you got these numbers from the Merit Systems Protection Board?
That's correct.
Is this a regular thing they do?
No, this is actually something that they included in one of their surveys because they saw Bureau of Labor Statistics surveys about the private sector and about state and local government, and they decided that this would be something that was worth their time to look into.
What other agencies rank high on the danger list?
Well, of course, at the top you have Veterans Affairs, but then you have Social Security Administration and Housing and Urban Development, and the Army and Health and Human Services are slightly above average as well.
Yeah, that's true. Well, what about places like the Justice Department?
Well, I mean, in those situations, you have they're actually relatively low, mostly because this within their workplace, it's tightly controlled. You have fewer people coming in and out. When you think about the way the Justice Department works, it's always a very tightly controlled situation. And even though they do have instances of workplace violence, they have a lot of preventive measures in place, and they have a lot of response measures in place to make sure it doesn't get out of control.
Well, that makes sense, and I guess, too, when they're, in the case of, with Social Security reps and postal employees, they're unarmed, but if you're U.S. Marshal or the DEA or something, Homeland Security, when you deal with disgruntled customers, typically you are armed as well.
And when you think about it, you know, postal workers, you know, nurses or doctors, in many situations, they're one-on-one with clients or customers. And those could be the most volatile. You know, a postal worker comes to people's doors, you know, and sometimes there can be danger involved with that.
Well, I know that the Postal Service has always taken a dim view of these cartoons that show the mailman being bitten in the rear by a puppy. And, you know, it's all ha-ha, very funny. But apparently dog bites are a significant cost to the taxpayers.
You know, that's one of those situations where it's sort of become a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason in that this does happen pretty frequently. And, you know, postal workers can't not deliver the mail to a house. They have to make sure that it gets there. And if that involves braving a dog or some other pet, then they'll have to do that, and that's a danger to them.
Well, and yeah, and a lot of them, too, work in industrial operations that are really factories, mail-moving factories, and so it's a dangerous place to work all around, I guess.
You know, that's correct. This is that's an agency that, you know, people think of as federal workers, but when they think of the generic federal worker, they just think of someone who sits at a desk. So when it comes to the federal worker, we have to remind ourselves that it's a wide and varied workforce.
Yeah. Well, what else did you draw from that the study?
Well, you know, we saw the study and we released our, you know, our report, and we got just a lot of comments from federal workers who, you know, wanted to share their own stories. And I think we forget, you know, that these incidents, they touch people, and whether it's someone who is the victim of bullying or intimidating, or someone who saw some incident of violence, these have real repercussions, and federal agencies need to make sure that they have policies and responses in place that involve things like arbitration, you know, counseling for after situations occur. And I think it's just a good reminder that there are emotional needs to consider when it comes to federal workers and what they do every day.
Well, I remember the pre-9/11 days when I would leave my office, and typically I'd go out and walk through a couple of federal agencies, just go in, and the VA was right down the street from me, and OPM was not that far away. But you go in, and you could actually look. They had bulletin boards in those days, but you could just look at, you know, see what people had on their walls and kind of get a feel for the place. And now most federal offices are like little Fort Knoxes.
You know, that they have upped security since 9/11, and even afterwards, as you mentioned before earlier in the show, that there have been shootings, there have been other incidents that require enhanced security, and that's one of those situations where you need to put people at the door, basically, because you can no longer sort of be content with an open-door policy.
Well, I've seen, heard speeches in Congress that the people are talking about saving money by privatizing security in federal agencies. And I find that interesting and intriguing because I have not heard any member of Congress who wants to privatize their security on Capitol Hill. You know, the U.S. Capitol Police Force is highly professional, well-trained, and members have given their lives literally to defend the House leadership a couple of years back. And yet you don't hear any, you hear talk about privatizing government security, but not security on Capitol Hill. What do you think would happen if more and more so-called rent-a-cops were brought into federal agencies?
Well, I think that you have to be careful, because what happens is you want to make sure that no matter what happens, and this is on both sides of the debate, the goal would be a higher quality workforce. And when it comes to privatization, there is a lot of worry amongst federal groups that they would be paid less, they would be trained less, and they would not be under the same sort of moral codes and employment codes that federal workers are under. And if you talk to federal law enforcement officers and officials, you know, there is a worry that this is just a way to undercut to save money on salaries. But what you might sacrifice in salary, you won't necessarily get any better quality. In fact, there is a worry that you could put federal workers in danger.
When I was much younger, I had a friend who was a private security type, and he took it seriously. He had been an MP in the Army, and so he was probably better trained than most. But he would be assigned to one office building one day, another the second. He never got into any routine. He never got to know any of the people. And he was the first to admit that the security wasn't good because of the way his office was handled, his operation was handled.
Well, and you talked about the Capitol Police that Congress relies on, and they are there every day, day in and day out, and they know the buildings, the people, they know the mannerisms, the times for arrivals, and that's a well-run machine, and that's one of the reasons why it's so highly respected, is that they have that permanence that they have there.
Good. Andy, thank you very much. We have to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the retirement tsunami. Is it upon us?
Thanks.
We'll be right back on Federal News Radio.
You hear that? That's a satellite 500 miles above the Earth. And no, you can't hear it or see it, but it's there. With Raytheon technology that's helping to predict the weather, monitor our climate, or capture images of our planet. A lot of Raytheon solutions are actively at work in much the same way. Unseen, but unmatched. After all, when your mission is space, the possibilities are infinite. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte, the amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International.
John Chakowski of the National Cancer Institute talks about the evolution of cancer research.
The business of cancer research evolves so quickly. When you just look at the past 10 years of genomic work and you look at how quickly technology has turned that function into, you know, $1,000 genome in 10 years, it's mind-boggling.
Agency of the Month, Wednesdays in October at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs, like those run by the National Institutes of Health, improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/term life to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. I'm talking with Andy Medici and Stephen Losey, senior writers for the Federal Times. We dispose of the subject of workplace violence. Very interesting, kind of scary numbers about the dangers of working for Uncle Sam. Now we wanted to turn to the possible retirement tsunami. Talk with Stephen Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times, about it. Stephen, people have been writing about the tsunami literally since 1999. Here it is, 2012. But maybe it started, huh?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way to me. And the reasons why are no surprise. You know, for the last 2 years or so, we've been hearing pretty much nonstop criticisms of federal employees, criticisms of their pay, their benefits. Some say they're overpaid, overcompensated, that they don't work very hard, and that maybe we should just have less of them. And you combine that with the concerns about the budget, the future of the federal workforce, whether the government is going to have to cut staffs and cut missions to deal with things like sequestration, deal with the inevitable budget cuts that are coming. It's no great surprise that there's more of an uptick in retirements. Now, if it was just, you know, 1 month or 2 months of higher retirements, I'd say we're looking at, I'd say it's a fluke. But when I dig into the numbers for the last 2 years or so, I am seeing a noticeable increase in the retirement rates in the federal government. Last year, for 2011, retirements were up 24% over all of 2010. And just last Friday, we got stats for September, last month. And over the first three quarters of 2012, retirements are up 8% over 2011 levels. So not only did we see a massive spike in last year, it's maintaining and even increasing a little bit this year.
I wonder how much of that is driven by the Postal Service and the buyouts and early outs it's been offering.
There's no doubt that that's one of the major factors. And, of course, the Postal Service is the biggest recipient of these buyout offers of the last couple of years. In August, there were about 3,000 mail handlers accepted 15,000 buyouts. There were about 4,200 postmasters took 20,000 buyouts over the last couple of months as well. So the Postal Service is the biggest recipient of all these buyout and early out offers, but there are a lot of other agencies that are getting them as well. So, yes, that is definitely something that's driving this retirement wave.
Well, for decades, the Office of Personnel Management has had a retirement backlog, a clogged pipeline, and largely because this is it's a paperwork process, and people have to eyeball these applications for retirement as they come in, and then reconcile that with what the worker is entitled to based on service, military service, breaks, if they owe people money. John Berry, the director of OPM, has moved to eliminate that backlog. How's he doing?
They're doing pretty good. The Office of Personnel Management has hired about 56 or so new specialists, who are in charge of reading through these people's work histories and figuring out, you know, putting pen to pad and figuring out what their pension should be. Those people have just been finished their training, so we're starting to see an impact on OPM's effectiveness. Last month, they processed more than 12,500 claims. That's the most so far this year, and they've whittled down the backlog from, I believe at one point it was in the 60,000 range, and last month it was just more than 41,000. So they are making progress. Now it's not just throwing more people at it. OPM has gone back and tried to look at their processes to figure out how to free up some of these people who process the claims and get some of the busy work out of their hair, get them so they don't have to answer phone calls from the public quite as much, things like that. So, John, as you said, it's been a problem that OPM has tried to tackle for decades, and just millions of dollars have been wasted on this effort. But John Berry seems to have at least gotten his arms around this issue. So let's see. I think the big moment of truth is going to be coming in the next couple of months. Last year, we saw a major, major spike in October in the number of retirements. And, of course, every January is the traditional month when most federal employees retire. So October is going to be an interesting month, and next January is going to be an interesting month. So if OPM system can handle those two spikes without breaking, I'd say that's a very good sign. So, like I said, we'll just have to wait and see how they do.
Well, the important thing about this, in addition to the people who are in the pipeline, if you're a few years away from retirement, you sort of yawn when you hear these numbers. And, you know, it's like Scarlett O'Hara, I'll worry about it tomorrow. But tomorrow does come, and when you do retire, you want to be sure that you've saved up money and you're going to be financially able to cope and to get by until your full annuity is paid out. Now, I have seen cases of people who were given as little as 44% of their estimated annuity. There are others who get 80%, and that's much more doable. But is there any rhyme or reason as to how they assign the interim annuity payment?
You know, it's really just kind of their best guess. I mean, I've seen people, I've heard from people who say they've gotten even less, like 20-25% of what they're eventually owed. There are a lot of factors that go into how OPM processes these interim payments that they have to hand out until they, you know, crunch the numbers and get the final amount. And there are sometimes things like whether you are divorced and have a have to pay child support, that can factor into it. If you have military experience as well, that has to be factored in, that can be, that can complicate matters. So yeah, there are a lot of factors that go in and that kind of throw the interim annuity all off. OPM says that they're trying to do better by relying on some of the initial estimates that the employing agency calculates, which they say are pretty good, and they say that has had an impact. So we're just gonna, but of course, I'm still getting complaints from employees. I'm sure you're getting some complaints as well. So while there may be improvements out there, OPM can't sit back and rest on its laurels just yet.
Right. It is a complicated process. I didn't realize that some people were getting as little as 20%. That could be an absolute nightmare.
That does seem to be a rare occurrence, though. I don't want to make it seem like everybody's getting 20%.
Right. Got an email from someone, changing subjects here, talking about the Social Security Administration, its decision to eliminate or cut back on overtime by closing some of its field offices a half an hour early. And the idea is that the people would continue to work, but they could be working rather than talking to customers. How's that working out?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, the SSA just announced last week this change. They're going to trimmed the hours half an hour last August, and last week they announced that starting November 19th, all 1,200 plus offices are going to close another 30 minutes earlier. And then as of January 2nd, SSA said the offices are going to close to the public at noon every Wednesday. So they are just trimming hours more and more. The problem is the reason they have to close them to the public is because lines build up, and they don't want to turn these people away. So even after they close, they have to stay late to hear the people who have been waiting in line for, who knows, an hour, 2 hours, whatever. And if they have to stay late, the agency has to pay overtime. And, you know, money is, of course, tight. There's a six-month continuing resolution that was just signed into office, signed by President Obama, I should say, that is tightening budgets at not just SSA, but across the government. So this is certainly an unwelcome solution. I'm sure the people at SSA, the leaders, hate doing this, but it's what they need. They have decided it's what they need to do to avoid busting their budgets.
Well, the AFG, as you well know, is a dominant union there, and I know they're unhappy with it. But listen, I want to thank you both for being here and bringing us up to speed on the office work violence and sequestration and that sort of thing. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Janet Copenhaver about what sequestration could mean to you at the airport lines.
Got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Looking for ways to help your agency help the environment? GSA has two free online resources that promote sustainability. With GSA's newly updated carbon footprint tool, you can compile your agency's annual greenhouse gas inventory and track progress toward meeting your reduction goals. And with GSA's sustainable facilities tool and green products compilation module, you can help your agency make sustainable purchasing decisions. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Andy Smith, principal at the McLean Group, and he'll tell us all about the business valuation practice and M&A practice of his firm. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the D.C. metro area. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Stop me if you've heard this one. A woman with a serious case of the sniffles goes to see her doctor. She leaves with a mammogram, an eye exam, diabetic screening, and prescription for that sniffling nose. No? We have. See, at Kaiser Permanente, our system uses the latest technology to set a new standard of connected care. So when you visit your doctor, your care team will have access to your medical history. They can see if you need to make any appointments, fill prescriptions, or if you're overdue for any potential life-saving screenings, like a mammogram. Then, they can instantly schedule one, often in the same day at the same facility. This advanced model of care has helped us achieve the highest mammogram screening rate in the Mid-Atlantic region. Okay, now stop me if you've heard this one. A member walks into a Kaiser Permanente facility. The entire staff works together to make sure that they live well, be well, and thrive. Pretty sure you've heard that one before. Not a member yet? Learn more at kp.org/Mid-Atlantic. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Skype connections are encrypted from end to end. The problem that some people are having is that Microsoft recently bought Skype. And Microsoft has been implementing some architectural changes to Skype. And now people are thinking that Microsoft or perhaps Skype itself has the ability to intercept phone conversations on their own servers. In other words, they could set up a man-in-the-middle attack from their servers.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
On its knees for years, Al-Qaeda appears to be standing up. Iraqi and U.S. officials say they're rebuilding in Iraq. They've built training camps in the western deserts for insurgents, seizing on regional instability and government security blunders. The Pentagon says it has data that suggests Iraq has seen a jump in Al-Qaeda attacks over the last 10 weeks, and officials believe most of the fighters are former prisoners that have either escaped from jail or were released. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, drug smuggling and violence threaten America's southwest border. Border Patrol agents need to identify and track moving targets more than 7 miles away. Only General Dynamics has built the tower system that keeps watch over 40,000 miles of U.S. coastline. Only EADS has installed systems that protect more than 8,000 miles of national land border worldwide. Together, they are the right team to protect the nation's borders. Learn more at borderdetection.com.
Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm glad to have you with us. And remember, we're always on Wednesday at 10 a.m., and our shows are archived, so you can listen to them or pass them on to a friend at your convenience. I'm going to be talking about sequestration, what it means to you and your job, what it may mean to you and your job. My guest here is Janet Copenhaver. She is with Federally Employed Women. Janet, thank you for literally tracking down from Tinleytown.
Thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
You're a Washington person of sorts. You went to American University?
Yes. I've been doing public policy for about over 20 years. That's about all I'll say about
okay,
that. No, I'm kidding. Don't want to date myself.
Yes. Good to have you. Well, actually, federally employed women, I think at first glance, some people might not think federally employed women would be tackling the sequestration issue, even though obviously you represent people who are federal workers. You did a very interesting white paper on the subject of sequestration and whatnot a while back. And what's interesting is your emphasis, and one of them was on furloughs and hiring freezes and how they work or don't work. And the interesting thing to me, and correct me if you see it differently, I've been trying to follow this sequestration thing since day one and since we learned what the word sequestration means, and everybody has a different definition. But I've been following it, and it seems that almost every day something changes. And they will talk about the dire consequences, and then somebody will say it's not going to be too bad. The White House comes out with a paper and a statement which says it would be destructive, was the term they used, to the government. And yet they missed a deadline for telling how destructive it would be. Congress instructed them to say how destructive it would be. And then now the Labor Department is telling contractors that they don't need to worry about sending out letters telling people they might be furloughed or fired because apparently they don't see it as that serious. So I'm quite confused about it. Have you got a clearer picture?
Well, I don't think anyone has a clear picture in Washington, D.C. But just to backtrack a little bit, we represent, yes, federally employed women, but we do tackle some federal government worker overall issues. The reason we are getting so involved in this is because women tend to get more adversely impacted by these economic scenarios. They tend not to move up the career ladder as fast, and there is a slight pay gap. So they are hit a lot, and then when you talk about pensions, cuts to pensions, they will get hit even more because they haven't put in as much because they tend to go in and out of the workforce to take care of family matters. So that's why this issue has gone to the top of our radar screen. And you mentioned, yes, that every day something changes, and that's true. And I think the administration is kind of hesitating because they don't want panic, and agency heads don't want to put all this information out there because they don't want people to panic, because they really are hoping against hope that an agreement will be reached by December 31st to avoid these 8.2% sequestration cuts.
Well, we're hearing from different groups, and I use the term pressure groups, and not in a put-down way, but these are people who represent certain interests. They may represent federal workers. They may represent contractors. They have other interests at heart. Some of them like the government. Some of them don't. Some of them depend on it. Some of them don't or think they don't. But we keep getting conflicting messages here, and earlier on, maybe 2 weeks ago, they were talking about major cuts of the Defense Department of the civilian workforce, and I think I saw 102,000 jobs was mentioned at one point might be at risk here, which would be about one out of six or something like that. Then more recently, we had a story on our homepage here which said, no, there won't be any layoffs. It's too complicated a process, that there won't be any layoffs, but that there almost certainly would be furloughs. And a lot of people think, well, furlough is pretty harmless, maybe one day a week or one day a month, something like that, 12 furlough days in a year. Government would save X amount of money. People could get by without it. It would be equivalent of a 20% pay cut, depending on how it hit them. But you say furloughs, and your White River furloughs are not that great the solution.
Yes, we actually did a white paper, as you mentioned, looking at several studies, specifically in California, where they had some furloughs, and they actually ended up costing more money than they saved. And you have to look at the indirect impacts. If you have, for instance, California, the DMV furloughed people, so they had to close. So the people who had to go during the workday, 9 to 5 when they're open, in the private sector were either on longer lines and had to wait longer. Therefore, they were away from their jobs. So the trickle-down impact, not only in the public sector, but in how it impacts the private sector, has got to be taken into consideration. And that's what's being lost. I mean, they're talking about these 8.2 sequestration cuts, and economists are saying 2 million jobs could be lost in our economy, and it'll hit us by cut our gross domestic product by 2.9% or $215 billion next year. That's what's getting lost, and we've got to consider the overall impact on our economy, not alone, you know, just, well, we can save this much from cut furloughs of salaries that we don't have to pay.
Well, it looks as if both sides are that this is really a giant game of chicken that's maybe gotten out of hand, and each side has used it from time to time to try to whipsaw the other one and get their point of view over. Do you think it's going to happen? Sequestration will hit us?
You know, I didn't think the government was going to close with Clinton either, and they did, and that was another game of chicken. This is really, really serious. They're talking Moody's is going to downgrade us again. If we hit that January 2nd day and they have to do all these cuts, I think the ramifications are going to be felt not only throughout the United States, but internationally. And our economy is going to probably go back to a worse recession than we were witnessing in 2008. So we are just begging and entreating Congress and the administration to really do something. We've started a weekly one-pagers on how the services, the critical services that federal workers provide Americans everywhere and in all sectors are going to be impacted. And we're just saying, you know, you got to put politics aside. Bipartisanship needs to come together, and we have got to find an answer to this problem.
It's interesting. I think you and I had the same epiphany over the same issue. When I was at the Washington Post, every year we went through the budget crisis, and there's going to be furloughs, there's going to be shutdowns. Almost never happened, mm-hmm. and I became very cynical to the ways of the world. And when that crisis, I think it was 95, 96, mm-hmm. came along, and Newt Gingrich was a Speaker of the House, Bill Clinton was President, and this situation came on, and they, as usual, pushed the panic button at the Post. And I went around assuring everybody that this mm-hmm. was standard operating procedure, never going to happen. Well, it happened. Mm-hmm. It actually happened twice. It was rather extensive. Nobody lost a nickel. That is, no federal worker lost any pay.
Right.
They were made whole, as they would be, again, presumably, if there's something like that. But a lot of contractors lost a lot of money. And, again, it just in the brief period of time it caused major problems. And you say it would be worse this time around?
Well, I think it would be because our economy is in more yeah. dire situation than it was at that time. And who knows if federal workers are going to be made whole this time. And I just think with our unemployment already at what it's sitting on, 8.1, and to add, you know, 1.5 percentage point to our unemployment rolls already with these across-the-board cuts will be devastating.
Yeah, it's not just the direct government workers that might be involved in it, but it's the contract people. And I think several learned institutions have estimated that for every government worker, there are at least 6 to 7 contractors. So if you throw them out, the ripple effect is tremendous. And then I know during the BRAC, the base realignment and closure studies, when they were talking about bringing people into an area like Northern Virginia and moving them into places like around Fort Meade, Maryland, they were saying that for every federal job that comes here, I believe the figure was 4 to 6 other jobs are created to service them, whether it's hotels, motels, restaurants, grocery stores.
Right.
So it can go both ways.
And let's move outside the Beltway, and let's move to the rural areas where you'll have a base or you'll have a federal facility, and that is employing the majority of people in that community. So you shut that down or you do some furloughs, and you're not only going to impact those federal workers, you're going to impact the entire community because now they're not going out to lunch. They're not buying anything. They're really hunkering down because their pocketbooks have been much smaller. And that's going to impact an entire community. So when we think of the federal workforce, we always think of Washington, D.C., where you have other private sector people who can still go to the restaurants and go to the shops. But in these rural areas, that's it. That's what they depend on. And it's just getting lost in all this partisan debate.
What little traveling I've done this year, but I have done some, and this is the land of milk and honey here inside the Beltway. We are living very well compared to virtually everybody else because of this huge, constant, every 2 week government infusion of salary money.
Mm-hmm, right. And 85% of the federal workforce is outside Washington, D.C.
Take a break here, and we'll return talking with Janet Copenhaver from Federally Employed Women. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Agencies across the federal government are offering buyouts to employees. Is yours one of them? Check out Federal News Radio's buyout guide at federalnewsradio.com. Search term buyouts.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
This week's Experts in Health topic is breast cancer detection, featuring Dr. Kathy Wolcott, a family practitioner with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the Kaiser Permanente Silver Spring Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Wolcott at Kaiser Permanente. We understand that early detection and treatment of breast cancer can increase the chance of survival, which is why Mid-Atlantic Permanente physicians of all specialties proactively review each member's electronic medical record to see when she had her last mammogram. A woman may come in for an ophthalmology appointment for an eye issue, but she could leave with her mammogram appointment in hand, often having the option to complete the mammogram in the very same medical center that day. Only Kaiser Permanente doctors from all specialties can do this. It's no surprise that we have the highest mammography screening rate in the region.
Dr. Wolcott was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Breast cancer screening rate as reported in HEDIS 2011.
The Air Traffic Management Report, provided by Raytheon.
As air travel increases, the world becomes smaller. The modernization of airspace systems is helping to meet this growing demand with greater capacity, safety, and efficiency. Raytheon's world-class technology, training, and industry leadership in U.S. and international airspace management are helping to ensure these important goals are met. Transformation of air travel. It's happening today.
Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives. The Association of the United States Army invites you to attend its 58th annual meeting and exposition.
Held October 22nd through the 24th at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free but limited to qualified persons. For information, please visit 2012AUSAAnnualMeeting.org.
Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm glad to have you with us. And remember, we're always on Wednesday at 10 a.m., and our shows are archived, so you can listen to them or pass them on to a friend at your convenience. My guest is Janet Copenhaver with Federally Employed Women, getting a different look at the what might happen if sequestration hits us. And Janet, we had a caller, or a emailer rather, who said, what does sequestration mean? And I know it's a legal term, and I probably, if you asked 10 people, you'd get 10 different versions of it. It's one of those things Congress sometimes does in order to saying slash and burn, they say we will sequester it. But the bottom line is they're talking about it would be across the board with some exceptions, would not touch the uniform military, but it would be across the board, the rest of the government, and it would cut force him to cut, is it 8%?
It's roughly 8.2%.
8.2%.
Across the board.
And that's across the board. I mean, do they have any choice? For instance, you know, there's the famous Washington Monument cut, you know, where if they cut the Interior Department's budget, then Interior, which is in charge of the National Park Service, shuts down the Washington Monument. Of course, the earthquake did that. But normally it's a very popular tourist attraction. Well, they shut it down when the kids come to D.C. for spring break. The kids' parents complain to their member of Congress. The congressman complains to Interior. Interior says, give us more money. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the cynical way a Washington Monument cuts. But we'd have this across the board, wouldn't we?
Yes, you would. And how they actually do that remains to be seen. I'm not sure how much latitude the White House is going to give each agency head, and that's kind of what we have just been waiting for, but I don't think we're going to see it. I think they're going to wait until the last minute in the hopes that there is an agreement before December 31st when the cuts would go into place at the beginning of the year 2013. So we really don't know how exactly they're going to put the cuts into place. Each agency is going to be cut, and hopefully they can be able to come up with their own ways. But still, an 8.2% cut across the board. Some agencies are very, very lean, and they can't absorb that.
Well, they're punishing them for being efficient, lean and efficient.
Exactly.
The ones who've given the money back and have trimmed personnel voluntary mm-hmm. or through attrition. You made an interesting comment during the break. You were talking about an across-the-board cut to an individual such as you, such as me, such as any of our listeners. It's one thing to cut your overall spending by the magic figure 8.2%, mm-hmm. but if you had to cut everything, you can't go to the bank that holds your mortgage and say, I'm going to pay you 8.2% less for the foreseeable future. Is that right?
Exactly. And you know, personally, I have a spreadsheet of all my household expenses. And when my son went off to college, I said, okay, I have to cut some stuff. But I couldn't just, like you said, just do 8.2 and cut my mortgage by that and cut my electric bill by that, because it was already as low as it could go. So that's not responsible budgeting, and it's really not responsible for Congress to be governing this way.
I had a simple but very good question from an agriculture employee who emailed it into us today. He's out in the West, and he said, when will those of us in the provinces beyond the Beltway, when will we know whether sequestration is going to take effect or not? And I guess my answer, and I'm not trying to be flippant, is probably 1 second after we know,
mm-hmm.
because we don't have any crystal ball here or any pipeline to the truth.
Exactly. We will know a whole hell of a lot more after the election. And that, because there's two different scenarios. One, if Romney is elected president, they'll probably punt because the Republicans want to hit this package their own way. So if he's elected, they'll punt until after he gets into office and then really tackle the budget issue. If Obama is reelected, there's more chance that they will try and do a longer-term solution because he's going to be in for 4 years. They will be coming back for a lame duck, I think the week before Thanksgiving. And we'll know a lot then. If they're able to come up with an agreement, we'll know then. And then, you know, hopefully they'll be gone until the new 113th Congress starts.
So if what you say, if Romney's elected, you think they'll punt, what would that mean? What
they could do just a 3-month or 4-month, let's say, delay in the sequestration cuts. So they won't have to deal with that until he is in power and coming up with his own budget answers.
Well, without being flippant or, I think, overly cynical, given the track record of Congress over the last 10 or 15 years under both parties' control, that would seem to be a very likely thing to happen if Romney is elected, mm-hmm. and maybe even if Obama is reelected, huh?
They could maybe punt then, too.
I mean, they're
talking.
Yeah.
The leaders of the budget committees are talking, but I don't know how much they've done, and now they're gone. So they're gone till after Election Day.
Yeah. We were talking before the show about what would happen in government, what would happen to people if the government shut down. You gave the example of California where the DMV shut down for one day a week and the ripple effect that had on people who have to drive their cars in for emission testing or what have you. And they lost time, and the effect was that industry slowed down. Productivity mm-hmm. literally slowed down from anybody who had to deal with the DMV and presumably other California state government offices. What would be the impact? Can you walk through it? An average person like me, let's say I'm gonna be traveling for business or pleasure. How does it start off at the airport?
Well, the travel is going to be a mess because you're looking at some pretty major cuts. We're going to have to cut TSA. They're going to have to eliminate about 9,000 positions. So security lines obviously are going to take longer to get through. Then you're going to have to cut air traffic controllers. So that's going to decrease the number of flights taking off and landing because obviously you can't take off and land without an air traffic controller. So some routes are going to be discontinued because they just they can't put that many airplanes up there. You're also going to see increased prices because not only passenger travel, but cargo travel is going to go up. Again, you don't have the air traffic controllers, so you're not going to be flying as many cargo. Then you're going to have to lay off technicians. So more airplanes are going to be disabled and not able to fly because mechanically they're not ready, and you've laid off some technicians, mechanics. So right there, you haven't even taken off yet, and you're looking at major delays, major cost increases, and then just a pure safety, which that's what we keep stressing is, you know, you've got secure border security and immigration. You'd forget going internationally, flying internationally, because then you're going to have that, even a delay in getting your passport, more expensive airplane tickets. So just in that little tiny sector alone of air travel, we're looking at major, major issues, major economic issues.
Do you think that the people in Congress who have set up this sequestration, do they not know about this, or do they know and don't believe it, or do they know and not care? It's a psychic question, but
yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I can't imagine they don't realize this, especially when you talk about, like we were saying, the rural areas, how. They represent these rural areas. They represent these, let's say, these defense military centers that employ the vast majority of their constituents. So maybe some of them think it's exaggerated and that's not really going to happen. But we have economists looking at this, and you know, we're not making this up. An 8.2% cut means some people are going to have to even be furloughed, but that means they're not on the job. So they're not performing the services. And that's really what our weekly series is all about. We're really trying to press the critical services that are provided to Americans each and every day in every sector of our lives that are going to be impacted.
Well, you talked about the TSA, slower processing of people getting on planes. Fewer air traffic controllers means fewer flights, mm-hmm. delays. Cargo is stalled. I guess this would apply to customs and border patrol.
Sure.
People coming in and goods being imported. Everything would back up. You got any other ideas about what it would do to the economy?
Well, you have the obvious ones, food safety. I know, you know, you think about Thanksgiving and how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of turkeys won't be inspected. So the safety of our food, our clean air, traffic, you know, your roads, keeping up with road repair. I know the transportation fund would be hit by several $100 million. You have that. So, and then you have our teachers. Our first weekly series was teachers are going to be, have the number, a couple hundred thousand teachers would be laid off. Kids low income would lose not only food aid, but just, you know, low income help. For families, for that would be cut. We're just looking at every area of our sector would be adversely impacted.
Pretty grim. Janet, thank you so much for being with us, and we're going to have you back on this and as we get closer to Sequestration Day. Thank you very much for being with us. Remember, our shows are archived here. You can listen anytime, and we'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.